Hello and welcome to Wagner Sports Talk. And we're back for another episode. So today I want to talk about the NBA making a return, the MLB making a return, as well as some great fights last night, once again, from the UFC. They've continued to have great fights, and I hope that it continues at UFC 251, which I will also talk about. So, starting off first, we're going to talk about the NBA returning. So, what's to happen is for the 31st, July 31st through August 14th, they'll have quote-unquote seeding games. And so, pretty much what this means is that it will, this is how the teams will make the playoffs, I believe. And every team, there's 8 games per team. Each team plays 8 games, which is just, it's crazy to decide, that's how they're going to decide who gets back to play and who gets to play in the playoffs. And training camps begin June 30th, so they start Tuesday, and then, so I said August 14th is when the seeding games end, and then there will be play-in tournaments if needed, the August 15th and 16th, and then August 17th, the first round of the playoffs begins. And then August 31st through September 13th is the second round of the playoffs. The 15th through the 28th are the conference finals. September 30th, the NBA finals begin. And then October 13th would be the final game, Game 7, if it's needed. So they have a schedule put together. And it's just crazy to think this season will end just a week or two before normally next season would begin. So it's just, it's crazy to see how all this stuff has changed. And these leagues have really adapted well. Not as well as the UFC, which I really love what Dana White did. How he just really, he never really stopped. I mean, he stopped for like a month and at the beginning of it when there was complete uncertainty. But he just, he went with it. He went with the flow. And he did whatever it took to have his sport back. And I really commend him for that, because that was a great job, being able to continue with your sport. So, back to the NBA, though. I think it'll be really interesting that they only have 8 games to show who's playoff ready. And I think they obviously keep their current records, and they just play it out, and they play the rest of the season out. And there's actually 8 teams that won't be coming back, and 22 teams that will be. And I think it's nice that, I think it's smart that they eliminated the 8 teams, because they were really just unneeded. Like, it hurts that the Cavs won't be able to play again, but they didn't have any hopes of really being able to win the championship. Zero hopes. So I'm fine with them not returning, but the teams that will be returning are the 22 teams, are the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Miami Heat. Sorry, one second. I just lost the list. I'm not sure why. The Heat, and then obviously, sorry. So the Pacers, the 76ers, the Brooklyn Nets, the Orlando Magic, the Washington Wizards, and then obviously the Los Angeles Lakers, the Los Angeles Clippers, what's going on here? Here we go. The Wizards, And then the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Thunder, the Houston Rockets, the Dallas Mavericks, the Grizzlies, the Trailblazers, the Pelicans, the Sacramento Kings, the Spurs, and the Suns will be coming back from the Western Conference. And you can tell that there's a lot more Western Conference teams than Eastern Conference teams. It's a lot tighter of a race. So how many teams are from the East? We have the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, the Heat, the Pacers, 76ers, the Nets, the Magic, and the Wizards. So nine. So there's only one of the teams returning from the Eastern Conference that's not going to be in the playoffs. And all of those are pretty solid teams from the East. Those are teams that could legitimately win it. And then there are a lot more from the Western Conference. I'm going to go over those teams again. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Thunder, the Rockets, the Mavericks, the Grizzlies, the Trailblazers, the Pelicans, Sacramento Kings, the Spurs, and the Suns. That's 13 teams. That's a lot of teams. That's four more teams than are coming in the than are coming back in the Eastern Conference. And the Western Conference, you can just tell, is a lot tighter. These teams are very grouped together, and I can't wait to see them actually come back and play. I think it'll be very interesting to see these teams actually come back and be able to perform. So now we're moving on to baseball. They announced that they'll have a 60-game season for 2020, which is an abbreviated season, which we expected. And so now they're only playing about one-third of the games. So they were only going to give the players one-third of the pay for half, for playing half the season. That's why it took them so long to decide on what they were doing, because there was so much disagreement between the players and the owners, and it was just a whole mess. But they finally figured it out. 60-game season. Opening day is on July 23rd or 24th. And there's a lot of things that have changed for the season. So the first thing I'm seeing here is format of regional schedule finalized. So the exact schedule still needs to be made, but we know the structure of it. Every team will play 40 games against divisional foes, which is crazy. It's so weird. So 10 apiece against each team, 10 games against each team in your league, and 20 interleague games against the geographical equivalent. The Nationals, for example, will play all their games against NL and AL East team. Okay, so pretty much the Indians, for example, they'll play all their normal AL Central rivals. So they'll play the Twins, they'll play the White Sox, they'll play, who else? I can't think right now. And also they'll play the teams from the NL Central, which is just, I think that's a really weird twist, sorry, I couldn't think, okay. So we'll play the Tigers 10 times, the White Sox 10 times, the Twins 10 times, and the Royals 10 times. And then we'll play the NL Central teams 20 times. So that's split up between the Pirates, the Reds, the Cardinals, the Cubs, and the Brewers. And so we'll get to see a lot more Cubs-Indians matchups this year, which I like because my brother's a Cubs fan. So whenever we beat them, I can make fun of him. So that's always a positive. There are always close games between us and the Cubs, and it hurt when we lost that World Series a couple years ago, but we're going to get over it. So there will be a 30-player roster, and then that number will get reduced to 28 after 2 weeks, and then 26 after a full month or 4 weeks. And then also another rule that I actually kind of like, they're doing a universal DH, because I think the reason is because NL teams are playing the AL team so much this year. We'll play the AL team so much this year. And so I actually think that's a smart rule. So now every team will have a DH, even NL teams. So that's definitely a change in the game. If you're an NL team fan, now you can have an extra hitter that might not be a great fielder, but he is a great hitter. That's nice for an NL team, for NL teams this year. So then the trade deadline will be in August. It will come exactly 1 month later than it normally is, August 31st instead of July 31st. So there is some time to trade players. And then that's about it for the new stuff that's going on with the league. I think it's a great thing that they're adjusting the league based on how they've had to change the game. I think that's really smart. And then also there's this other thing on here. It says unsigned players head to Nashville. Here's perhaps the most surprising element of the details revealed so far. Per Stark, MLB has talked with the city of Nashville about hosting two teams of unsigned players who would be paid to remain in shape as potential replacement players should the need arise during the season. Teams would then have to pay to add these players. It's unclear exactly who would be involved and how it would work, but it's worth knowing that it's a possibility. So pretty much what happened there, from what I'm gathering, is that you would have these players, they're in shape, they're ready to play, and say someone on your team has a coronavirus, you would get one of these people and they'd be on your team for the probably remainder of the season. If that person has coronavirus, or until they've met like a 14-day quarantine period, so I think they've really made some smart changes to the game as well as the NBA. I think they're finding now that it is possible, and really who showed it was Dana White. So we're talking about the UFC, yes. My favorite subject. I love to always talk about it because it's just so interesting to me. So, the last night there was a UFC fight night. Amazing fights, crazy fights. So I'm just gonna start with the bottom of the card, starting on the prelims. We started off with a featherweight bout between Yusef Zala and Jordan Griffin. Zala took the decision. It was a pretty close fight. I didn't watch too much of it, but it was a close fight, and I felt Zalal won, and that's who got the victory. So then there also were a lot of finishes on this card, and it was a very solid card. Everyone went all out, and it was really fun to watch. So then the next fight was in the women's strawweight division between Kay Hansen and Jin Yufrei. Hansen got a third round armbar about midway through the round. She locked it up. It looked like she might have been going for a triangle. Then she locked up the armbar, and that was it. And she got the win. She's also very young. She's only 20, I believe. And she is the youngest fighter on the females roster. So then the next fight was Felipe Linz versus Tanner Boser. I got to watch Linz fight a couple weeks ago. I forget when it was exactly. And it was against Andrei Arlovsky. And I expected him to win. But Tanner Boser surprised me. He came out with a first round knockout. He hit him with a nice shot. knocked him down. And then it was great. He jumped on top of him and hit him with a back fist. He, like, when he was jumping on top of him, he hit him with a giant right back fist. And the fight was over. He had Linz unconscious. And Bozer also called out Maurice Green after the fight, which was a pretty good call out. I expect to see them fighting on Fight Island as a prelim or in one of the main cards. So then the next fight was Kama Worthy versus Luis Pena. And this was actually crazy because Pena was desperately trying to get the fight to the ground because I'd say Worthy probably won the first round. It was a close first round. Pena definitely won the second round because he had he was maintaining back control. But then in the third round, Luis Pena tried to take down Kama Worthy. But Worthy, it was a really slick guillotine, or guillotine if you're Michael Bisbee. But he got a nice guillotine. It wasn't normal one in full guard. He was kind of up against the fence, but it was in tight. His neck was way in there. Luis Pena's neck was way in Kama Worthy's arm, and he got the tap. So then the next fight was Sean Woodson versus Julian Arosa. Arosa, it was a close fight. I felt that Woodson might have been winning up to the point where the submission happened. Arosa locked in a nice... It was either a D'Arce or an Anaconda. It was something where he was kind of on the front of him and under his neck. But a nice submission, nevertheless, by Arosa there as the first fight on the main card. Really proving his worth. And this was a catchweight bout at 150. And Sean Woodson's giant. He's like 6'3 or something, or 6'2. And he fights at featherweight, which is 145 pounds, which is just insane. But Julian Rosa with a nice victory there. So then the next fight was Takashi Sato versus Jason Witt. Sato came in with a nice quick win, 47 seconds. With the KO, it was a nice win for him. So then the next fight was Brendan Allen versus Kyle Daukaus. It was a pretty close fight, and Brendan Allen came out on top. I believe there was one round where it was like, it definitely shouldn't have been scored like that. But, you know, it was a solid victory for Brendan Allen showing up in a big way. So then the next fight... This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. Jean Volante versus Maurice Green. So, Jean Volante was obviously tired. He had, like... And in the third round, he hit Maurice with a big right, I believe. Or no, it might have been a left over the top. I think it was left over the top, left hook. And as Maurice was trying to a Superman punch, he caught him clean. So then Jean tried to finish the fight on the ground, couldn't. And then Maurice was near the fence. He was on the ground. And like he was in, I believe, side control. It was either side control or half guard. Jean Volante was. He was on top. And he tried, like... And Maurice Green, he was holding on for dear life, just trying not to get hit. And then Jean Volante tapped. I was so confused. I didn't know what had happened. I was just lost. I was like, wait, did that just happen? It was announced... It's an arm triangle from the bottom. I don't even know how to describe what he did, but I was so confused because it wasn't even like he was trying to submit him. He was just trying to survive underneath him. And I think Volante might have won a decision. I would have called it a draw because I think that last round was a 10-8 round. And then Maurice won the first two rounds in my mind. But I don't even know how that happened. Maurice Green, arm triangle from the bottom. So then the next fight, the co-main event, Mike Perry versus Mickey Gall. Mike Perry is just such a crazy dude. I mean, the way he just came after him with those big punches, he's just relentless. He just stays on you. And then the way he was taking Gall down, because that was, like, the big thing about Mickey Gall, was he was gonna, like, try to submit him and stuff. And Perry just wasn't going for it. He just dominated him, and he dominated him everywhere. And he even knocked him down in the third round. Almost ended the fight. Couldn't quite because Gall was rolling around on the ground very well, avoiding the fight finish. But a very solid performance from Mike Perry earned that unanimous decision. And he only had his girlfriend in his corner, which was the weirdest thing ever. Like, you normally have a team of guys that have helped you prepare for the fight. But it was just his girlfriend. It was so weird because in between rounds, she didn't even say anything. He just sat there, and she just put, like, the ice on his neck. He just sat there. And I remember him talking just like, oh, yeah, that was good. That was fun. Or something like that. It was just so weird. And then the main event. Woo! What a fight. That was an insane fight. Dustin Poirier versus Dan the Hangman Hooker. Wow. What a fight. Dustin, hell of a fight, man. Dan, hell of a fight. They just, the first two rounds, they just banged it out on the feet. It was great, great fighting. Just great boxing. Just standing in a phone booth and just trading insane action there. And then as the fight progressed, they started trying submissions. They tried to strangle each other. And that was great, too. The groundwork was great. The stand-up was great. I thought it was one of the greatest fights of the year. Could win fight of the year. I just thought it was such a great fight. And that's all I've got for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm probably going to be coming back tomorrow. Talking about UFC 251, maybe? I don't know. Maybe. But I hope you have a great day. That's it.